with a price.
Yeah, but you're old.
Not as old as you think, young man.
The idea of beating death does sound promising. It's when you start putting such ideas into motion that people get nervous. The world was different in my time. In the mid-1960s, cryonics advocates were a small fringe group. Some organizations were rocked by scandal, sometimes due to incompetent people and equipment, and other times because of sensational media coverage.
Mildred, what's media?
Newspapers, video, tabloids, the media. They broke all of the news stories that made people nervous. Stories such as how in the early days of the program, scientists were having to make do with storing bodies in the surplus wingtip fuel tanks of Air Force jets. No big deal, until it got out that the tanks weren't one size fits all. And when they had people too obese to fit, they chainsaw their arms off and stick them in that way. After my father's murder at the hands of those Klansmen, I wondered, could cryonics have preserved him until such a time as miraculous regenerative processes could be the norm? I suppose that curiosity is what continued to carry me into the field. I wanted to be one of the new, innovative thinkers, blazing new trails and...
So what happened? Why did the cryo program go the way of the Mattrans units and Operation Kronos and Over Project Whisper and all the other subtly named covert government projects?
Believe it or not, John, what really, truly, undeniably saved the program was government interest and involvement. If the average hardworking American believed cryonic suspension to be the stuff of bad science fiction novels, so much the better. Grants and equipment were available to the right doctors, and my own profile was high for a number of reasons.
Why?
I was a woman, I was black, my theories made sense, and I was a former Olympic medalist. You couldn't ask for a more suitable candidate. Once I was in the door, I soon discovered that organizations such as the American Cryonics Society and the Alcor Life Extension Foundation were all smoke screens. Only a few dozen people were listed officially as being frozen at the end of the year 2000, with a waiting list of hundreds wanting to join the program.
Now, we all know that's a crock.
Of course. In actuality, the number stretched into the thousands, with chambers and preparations being made for thousands more in case of war. Cryonic suspension was expensive, too. Only the rich and the powerful, or the very important, got a seat in the freeze chambers. I made it because of my research and because of the woman who operated on me pulling some strings. She was my friend, and she didn't want me to die on an operating table.
So there could be an untold number of freezies waiting to be discovered?
Yeah. I imagine some high muckamuck couldn't resist the idea of a cryo version of Noah's Ark, which means any and all living creatures up to Skydark may be safely tucked away somewhere sleeping.
How much, Jack, are we talking to freeze somebody?
Ryan eyed the chambers, fascinated in spite of himself. Some of what she was telling the others wasn't unfamiliar to him, after what he'd seen going on in the Black Hills laboratories of the Anthill. In those frigid chambers, he'd held conversations with men dressed in business suits with wag coolant for blood. Mildred's eyes unfocused for a moment as she thought about it.
Seems like I recall the official public price as being something along the lines of $125,000 for a whole body. Or, in the case of just wanting to preserve the head in a procedure called neuropreservation, that was around $50,000. Pricey and beyond most people's means. None of it matters now. There's nothing here but death and pride.
Okay, Mildred. Come on, everyone. Let's go.
The group left the cryo labs quietly. Outside, the scabby Adrian lit up as the group emerged.
Well, what was in there? What'd you find?
Nothing. We didn't find a damn thing, but dead folks and some heads.
So? Of course they're dead. What about the loot?
There wasn't any.
Oh, come on, Carter. You said you'd be fair. There's gotta be loot.
Adrian turned pleading eyes onto Mildred, who just looked tired.
Unshill the bastard so we can divvy up the loot. Please!
There's no loot to be had, Adrian. Cryo patients aren't placed inside their capsules, wearing rings on their fingers and bells on their toes. This process isn't like preparing the dead for a burial in a coffin with jewelry and their favorite things to take along on their journey into a new life. You go into a freeze tube as naked as the day you were born, with only a sheet to cover your soon-to-be lifeless body.
Oh, shit! Are you sure?
Yeah.
Hell, much as it costs to do this, no wonder there's no valuables with these freezies. Spent all their loot getting put in this condition. Lighten up, Adrian.
Ryan handed back the glum scabby's captured Colt 45.
Let's blow this joint before another party of stickies decides to come looking for the batch we chilled.
The group made their way to a stairwell, which was pitch black and cold. Even with the hidden nuke generator that still possessed enough juice to keep the freezies on ice and bring the oddly configured Matran's room safely online, apparently there was nothing left over for illumination, except for the essentials needed back in the sub-basement. Adrian took out a small pocket flashlight and started rapidly squeezing a trigger over and over. A beam of light shot out of the clear plastic end.
Self-generating. Long as my finger doesn't give out, we got some light. You want me to take the lead?
You got the light. Don't worry, I'll back you up. We go up until we're out. Take it nice and slow. I don't like traveling practically by feel, but we don't have any other options.
Onward, the group traveled, past levels of different colors, blue, orange, and red. Adrian tried one stairwell door, and it opened into a wide corridor that led into a ruined chapel. The stained glass shattered. The pews ripped up from the flooring and removed. The light beam coming from the hand-powered flashlight picked out brief images of the desecration before he closed the door.
Wrong floor.
They continued upward until Adrian tried one more door.
Ah, here we are.
The scabby led them out onto a parking deck. Rusting frames of automobiles lined the sides of the deck. Some of the designated slots were empty, but most still housed the remains of their former tenants of rubber, chrome, and steel. A Cadillac Seville over here, a Chevrolet Lumina over there. Any part of value had been long since scavenged, leaving gaping holes beneath the hoods and inside the interiors. Engine blocks were MIA, along with head and taillights, and any other instruments that could be used elsewhere in the massive retrofitting that kept automobiles and wags moving along in what passed for the Society of Deathlands. All that was left of the cars and trucks housed in the deck were the frames and the metal wheels. Dean hugged his jacket close to his body.
Ugh, triple cold in here. Nothing around us but concrete. Feels damp.
Don't like it. Let's get the hell out. Like it in the open.
I prefer open spaces myself, Jack. At least you can always see what's coming. Adrian, where are we?
In Carolina. Northern part, near the Blue Ridge Mountains. Go up about 50 miles or so, and you'd be in the lower part of Virginia.
This area doesn't look all that rural.
Christy leaned out over the railing of the deck and into the afternoon sunshine, which cascaded beautifully off her red hair.
Looks more like a city.
It is. That it was. This is Winston-Salem, one of the bigger metro areas of old Carolina. Made cigarettes here. You can see what's left of the downtown over there where what's left of the tall buildings are. I don't recommend going there for a sightseeing tour.
Why's that?
Stickies. Downtown belongs to them. For a long stretch of time, there's been an unspoken truce between the Carolina norms who live in this region and the muties. Stay away from the claimed grounds and there'll be no fighting or retribution.
Doc stared at Adrian, his doleful eyes full of misgiving.
And do tell, where does this hospital fall?
No man's land. Now, stickies are technically closer, but since anything of practical use had long been taken out, I was gambling there would be no reason for them to be in here.
Only a fool gambles with a retarded deck of cards, and any group of stickies is full of jokers and deuces. There's no rhyme or reason as to what they do and when they do it. Crazy bastards.
Amen, Brother Ryan. Still, we could be in worse shape. We're in the middle of what used to be called Medical Row. Go along Hawthorne for about 2 miles until you hit what's left of Silas Creek Parkway and Highway 40. Nothing in between but a few residential sections and rows upon rows of doctor's offices. Had a doc for any ailment that plagued you back then.
Not anymore. I knew this place. Spent some time at this very hospital, in fact. By the 1990s, North Carolina had some of the finest physicians and medical equipment in the entire country.
The old road's still intact, more or less. We'll follow it towards freedom. I've got some business there, and it'll give us a safe place to spend the night. What's wrong?
Adrian blinked as he tried to comprehend the sudden dark expressions that crossed the faces of Ryan's group upon the mention of the word freedom.
This freedom? At the name of some kind of vill?
Ryan's mind involuntarily crawled back to another freedom, the Freedom City Motor Hotel and Casino, located in the southeastern part of the Carolinas. It was the lair of the former Baron Willie Elijah and his mutie-hating mercies, the site of a vicious battle with Lord Ka, a self-styled Lord of the Mutants who had confronted Elijah and his humans in a brutal fight, ending in the Baron's ultimate demise.
Yeah, sort of. But better. You gotta see it to believe it.
JB crossed his arms and frowned.
Already have. Don't want to go back, either.
No. This is obviously a different freedom. It has to be.
What's the southern fascination with the word freedom, anyway? Seems half the places we've ended up in the Carolinas has been named Freedom This or Freedom That.
White guilt, Dean.
What's that mean, Mildred?
The war between the states was triggered by many pivotal events, my young Inquisitor. One of which was the thorny subject of slavery. The white overlord and his darker-hued property. Those in power in the South said they needed the slave labor to maintain their fields. And when President Lincoln signed his fateful proclamation, mounting tensions went beyond discussion and boiled over into full-scale conflict. The South seceded from the North, and there was holy hell to pay.
Everyone pays the freight in a war, Doc.
Indeed, John Barrymore. After the war, likely due to the more forward thinkers in the Carolinas, Georgia, Virginia, and so on, the name Freedom worked its way into many a new southern building or street. The traditions continued well into the late 1900s and up to Skydark.
Well, that's one interesting thing about the end of the world. It tends to be a great equalizer.
Hours later, after making their way down the parking deck to the road below, the party of eight continued to follow the broken pavement of the old Hawthorne Road. Extra care had to be given to watching where they stepped, as the road was pitted with small holes that could easily twist an ankle or cause a fall. At times, the blacktop disappeared entirely, to be replaced with a mix of lush, ankle-high green grass and the hardy, small-way daisies that seemed to bloom throughout Deathlands. Ryan took notice of the lack of sounds in the air. Before, there had been faint reminders that life was still here among the ruins. The hum of insects, the discussions between the arguing friends, the sound of footsteps rising and falling on the road. Now it was almost as if each of them had subconsciously started trying to move more silently, a hidden command to breathe easy and keep noise to a minimum. The absence of bird calls was especially noticeable. Once, Christy had wordlessly tugged at Ryan's long coat. When he glanced back, he couldn't help but see that she was troubled as well. Her sentient red hair was coiling and uncoiling in a manner that indicated that she too subconsciously knew that something was wrong. Still, the tree-lined roadway gave all indications of being safe, and their guide had no problems with striding ahead without fear. Adrian apparently knew where he was going, and the closer they got, the more at ease he acted.
Been a while since I got out this way. Like you, I've been traveling myself, back and forth with no permanent place to hang my hat.
Dean, bored out of his young mind and looking up at the blue sky, noticed the movement in the trees first. His keen eyes detected a slight movement in the leafy covering of a particular large tree directly next to the scabby's head. The mighty oak's branches were hanging out like spread wooden fingers over the asphalt path they were traveling. He thought about mentioning it, but he didn't want to look like a stoop over a squirrel or other arbor-dwelling creature. Until the leaves parted, and the hidden men leaped out and were upon them.
Ambush!
His warning arrived a second too late, as two men dropped out of the tree, one landing on Adrian, the other choosing Ryan. Adrian fell like a dropped doll, taken totally by surprise, as the weight of his attacker came down hard and swift upon his head and upper body. The second man wasn't as lucky. Ryan reacted much more swiftly, his reflexes inhumanly quick as he brought up the muzzle of the Sig Sauer in a swift, practiced motion, each slug catching his assailant in the chest. The force of the bullets at such close range flipped the attacker backward, causing him to hurl his weapon away. He landed hard on his lower back and rear once his feet clumsily hit heel first on the broken road. Between the force of the bullets and the impact of the fall, The man writhed helplessly in pain. JB swung the butt of his own weapon in a forward arc across the back of the man who had focused his energies on the unsuspecting Scavvy.